Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. College football is in town. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we are going to head to, are we heading to Lincoln, Nebraska, or are we heading to Arrowhead Stadium? I don't know where we are headed, but we are going to have a Nebraska guest join us on the show. They are in town later today, taking on the Cincinnati Bearcats. Rob, have we ever been to Lincoln, Nebraska before? I'm just trying to think of a time that you and I have ever headed to Lincoln, Nebraska before. I don't think we've ever had a reason to have a Nebraska guest on the show. We are very happy to have on Sean Callahan, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers. He's been covering them for quite some time, but I don't think we've ever had a reason to go out to Lincoln, Nebraska.
Did we have him on when they signed Raiola? That would be the only other time I can think of that, because getting Raiola was a huge deal. But other than that, I don't know we've ever had a Cornhusker on the show.
So coming up in just a little bit, we're going to head to Nebraska to catch up with Sean Callahan, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers. We are exactly 1 week away from the start of the NFL season, and Micah Parsons is still nowhere to be found for the Dallas Cowboys. We'll get into that. We got a lot of things to get into in today's show. Before we do any of that, I need to remind you guys of a couple of things. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock. Right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you guys to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, it'd be great if you could tell two people to check out the show, but you know what? If you could just tell one friend to check out the show, I would greatly appreciate it. And number three, I need you to remember that the show open is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place with 5 locations around town. You can stop in, grab yourself a bite to eat, grab yourself something to drink. Maybe you catch the Nebraska game coming up later today. Missouri also plays later today as well. We got a great slate of college football this weekend. So if you're looking for a place to grab a bite, also catch the game, the perfect place to do that is with our friends over at The Other Place. All right, let's split the lead up just a little bit as we are getting into the show today. Number one, we have to tip our ball cap to the Kansas City Royals. We talked a lot about this yesterday. The Royals, they had their back up against the wall. In the second game of this series against the Chicago White Sox, the Royals were down 4-0 heading into the eighth inning, and things looked absolutely bleak. The Royals pushed themselves up. They win yesterday's game. They had another must-win game against the Chicago White Sox, and boy, did they put a hurting on the Chicago White Sox. The Royals, over the last 3 days, did exactly what they needed to do. The Royals, I don't know if you can expect a sweep. It certainly would be great if you sweep the Chicago White Sox. They didn't, and I didn't want to move on too quickly after that first game. It all counts as one loss in the books the same. But what the Royals couldn't do is afford to drop a series to the Chicago White Sox, especially with the stakes this high. That did not happen. The Royals took care of business. The Royals did what they were supposed to do. They now sit 3 games back of the Seattle Mariners. So let's just all breathe easy. The Royals did exactly as they were supposed to, taking care of business against the Chicago White Sox. They take 2 out of 3, and now we look ahead to their series coming up against the Detroit Tigers. We'll get you a random lineup coming up in a bit. Just because it's football season doesn't mean that we break tradition. So we'll get you guys a random lineup coming up in just a bit. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Nebraska. We'll also talk some college football here coming up in a bit. Today feels like we have another unofficial start of the college football season. We already had one with week 0. We now have another unofficial start of the college football season, as there is, I believe, 16 games coming up later today. And then Saturday is a marquee heavyweight college football slate. We'll get to that as the week winds down. But thinking of today, I was thinking this as I was walking in, and Rob told me that it is expected that Nebraska is going to have 65,000 people who make the drive down from Lincoln to be at today's game. I'm going to say that again because that is an insane number of people to travel for a college football game. Rob told me today that it is expected that Nebraska is going to have 65,000 fans in attendance at later today's game. Now, it is not a long drive from Lincoln to Kansas City. In fact, I actually made that drive earlier this summer. I had never been to Lincoln before, so I was kind of curious to see the stadium and look around and just feel a little bit of the vibe. I mean, it wasn't a game day vibe, but it was a vibe nonetheless. 65,000 is a tremendous number, and it really got me thinking. I understand that Missouri is no longer in the conference. I also understand that the Big 12 is not the Big 12 that you and I grew up with. You know, back 20 years ago, there was a Big 12 North and a Big 12 South. And I don't think we maybe realized it at the time, but the Big 12 North, it was a community. All of those schools were very drivable from Missouri to Kansas to K-State to Iowa State to Nebraska to Colorado. If you wanted to make that trip out there, it was easy to make a decision that if you wanted to get in your car and head to a road game, you had the ability to do it. We didn't realize how special, we didn't realize how much of a bond that we had when it was the old Big 8 or was the Big 12 North. And you know what? Seeing Nebraska come back into town, feeling the excitement from Nebraska coming back into town, it reminded me of one thing. Regardless of what changes happen in the sport, regardless of what happens with the Big 12 and how many teams or what teams are in it, this is not the Big 12 that you and I grew up with. Arizona is in the conference. Arizona State is in the conference. Can you imagine if we could time travel and we go back 20, 25 years and I told you that West Virginia and Arizona State would be in the Big 12? You would have laughed at me. You would have called me crazy. That is what we currently have. Can you imagine if I told you that Nebraska was going to play a game at Arrowhead and they were not the team in the Big 12 and that Cincinnati was the team in the Big 12? Again, you also would have told me I was crazy. You would have told me that I had a hot take. No, that is what we have developed into in college football. I just want to point out that no matter what happens, no matter what changes, Kansas City will always be a Big 8 town. We love the Big 12, but it was a little bit different. It was a little bit different. The one thing I know is Kansas City loves the old Big 8. Talk to anybody. Talk to our uncles. Talk to our grandfathers, the people that went to the Big 8 tournament back when it was at Kemper Arena. There is a deep pride for college sports where we live. There is also a deep pride for the conference that we all grew up in. Now, we love the Big 12, but it's different now. But Kansas City is a Big 8 city. It is also a Big 12 North. And Nebraska will always be able to come to Kansas City and draw a crowd like they are today. Iowa State is always going to be able to come down here and be able to draw a crowd. Obviously, Kansas and K-State, Missouri, they play basketball games here this year. Kansas City is just a hub for that conference, and it is a hold that it has on us that I don't think we will ever let go. So I'm excited to see what the crowd looks like tonight for Nebraska. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are in attendance. I'm actually not sure if this game makes a whole lot of sense if it's not for them. We know that Dylan Raiola, he goes up as Patrick Mahomes. He celebrates that 24/7, 365. He's permanently wearing a Halloween costume. And obviously, Travis Kelce, he is an alum of Cincinnati University. So excited to see those two teams play later today. Rob told me he would go, but it's late. He says he has to be up and early for KU and Wagner tomorrow. Rob's taking the day off so he can get a full day of tailgating for KU Wagner on the football field. So he said, you know, it's a little too late to go. If Nebraska was playing a better opponent, maybe he would have considered going, but they're playing Cincinnati. And he can't let Cincinnati get in the way of a KU Wagner tilt at the new and improved booth. We'll talk more college football coming up in a bit. But Rob, we still got to stick to our rules. We still got to stick to our bread and butter. We talked about the Royals in the 2 o'clock segment, so that can only mean one thing. Rob, hit me.
We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals. If you Carrington, today's Random Royals lineup takes us back to the year 2012, where on this date, the Royals played at home against the Detroit Tigers, getting a win 9-8. Here was your lineup in 2012. Leading off in center field, Jerrod Dyson. Batting second, the shortstop, Alcides Escobar. Batting third, the left fielder, Alex Gordon. Batting fourth, the designated hitter, Billy Butler. Batting fifth, behind the plate, Salvador Perez. Batting sixth, at third base, Mike Moustakas. And batting seventh in right field, Jeff Francoeur. Batting eighth, the first baseman, Eric Hosmer.
This ain't a good lineup if Eric Hosmer's hitting eighth.
And batting ninth, at second base, Johnny Giavatella.
You're telling me Hosmer was hitting eighth and Johnny G was hitting ninth? We hadn't figured things out yet. We were still working out some of the kinks, still working out some of the flaws.
By the way, the Royals faced Justin Verlander on this date. He went 5 2/3. The Royals tagged him for 8 runs.
Billy Butler probably had a day. Remember, Billy Butler used to really have success against Justin Verlander.
I'm looking. Billy Butler got intentionally walked on this date, probably because of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Double by Gordon, double by Perez, double by Moustakas. But Luis Mendoza gave up 6 of his own. So this one had to go late in the game. Greg Holland got a save as the Royals will beat the Tigers on this date 9-8 in 2012.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by Sean Callahan, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Until then, let's talk a little bit of college football. Rob and I are going to tell you some of the players that we have an eye on heading into the season. Who could take a step forward? Who are some of the players that could factor into the Heisman race? Who are also some of the players that could factor in helping their team get to the college football playoff? We'll talk about that next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, your home for the best food takes in KC.
Regular old American nachos. You know, I don't need jalapenos with mine, just chips, cheese.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, Rob, why don't we talk a little college football before Sean Callahan joins us on the show today? I want us to talk about some of the teams that you and I are keeping an eye on. I want to talk about some of the players that you and I are keeping an eye on. Since Nebraska is coming into town, why don't we start the conversation with Nebraska? I think Nebraska has a chance to be pretty good this year. I think that Nebraska has an opportunity to put together one of the best teams that they have in maybe a decade. I really like their head coach. I really like their quarterback. I think the question now for their quarterback is, last year was the kind of feeling out process. He was the third ranked high school quarterback. You know the other ones. Number one was DJ Lagway in his class. He currently starts at Florida. They're a top 15 team. People think that DJ Lagway could help guide them to a college football playoff, and he could be a Heisman potential candidate kind of player. Julian Sayin was the number two player in that class. You also know who he is. He's the starting quarterback this year at Ohio State University. So last year you sat behind Will Howard. You waited your turn. Now it's your turn. We'll see what you look like Saturday night against the Texas Longhorns. Now we go to Dylan Raiola. He started as a true freshman. I thought he played pretty well last season. I think now the question with Dylan Raiola is, at least to me, and I don't mean this as a knock because we're talking about an 18, 19-year-old individual, but I think we can have this conversation about Dylan Raiola. Is he going to be a gimmick, or are we going to talk about him as a player? Because right now, the only way we really talk about Dylan Raiola is that he is cosplaying as an NFL quarterback. We're talking about a guy who has the potential of being really good. If you complete 67% of your passes as a true freshman, you had a chance of being a very, very good player. Now, he made a lot of mistakes last year. He threw 13 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions. Again, we're not talking about a redshirt freshman. We're talking about somebody who was playing high school football the year before, homecoming, all of that, and then stepped in, and now you're going up against Penn State, Oregon, and the big dogs of the Big Ten. So I'm not surprised that he didn't put together a massive season. The expectation now for Dylan Raiola is to take a step forward. Let's see what that looks like this year. if Dylan Raiola takes that step forward, I think we're talking about Nebraska as I don't think they're going to be a team that really competes for an opportunity to make the college football playoff, but I think they can put themselves in the conversation where heading into his junior year, that's the way that we discuss them. So you're looking at some of their important games. They essentially have a home game against Cincinnati. I know it's a neutral site. Cincinnati is not traveling. Nebraska is going to travel for that one. You got Michigan coming up in a couple of weeks. That's a home game. You know that's going to be a sellout crowd. Their road games in the Big Ten, I would say they got off kind of light. Maryland, Minnesota, UCLA. Now, you got to go on the road and play Penn State, but that's late in the season, and you can live with having one or two losses. I think if everything lines up for Nebraska, I think they can be a team that potentially wins 8 or 9 games this year. A lot of it really depends on Dylan Raiola. And again, I don't mean this as shade towards a 19-year-old. But the only time we talk about Raiola is the similarities in how he looks like Patrick Mahomes. We don't really discuss him as a player. We discuss Lenore Sellers as a player. We discuss DJ Lagway as a player. That's how I want to see if we talk about Dylan Raiola at the end of this season.
They are a, I don't want to say popular, that's an unfair way to describe it, but they are a trendy college football playoff pick. Because, like, Nebraska of yesteryear was a school that I hated, you hated, KU, K-State, Mizzou fans on the text line, you guys all hated. They were the enemy of the Big 12 North. But they've kind of fallen out of the zeitgeist, or at least in Kansas City, for a while. But Matt Rhule is a really good coach. Dylan Raiola at least had a ton of buzz as a recruit. He played okay as a true freshman. They had a good portal class, and people think they bring a lot back. And the Big Ten, we know, is going to put multiple teams in the college football playoff. This isn't a one-bid league. So Nebraska is a trendy, dark horse, keep-your-eye-on-them type of pick to make the college football playoff. Josh Pate, for those of you that follow college football, you know him. He does things with CBS Sports. He has them as a college football playoff team. I think he has them as the 10 seed in the college football playoff this year. So if Dylan Raiola starts having that type of season, and they're a team that we're talking about being in the college football playoff or competing for the college football playoff down the stretch, similar to how we were last year with other Big Ten teams and where they're going to fight to get in, like if that conversation starts emerging and it's late September, October, November, then I think Dylan Raiola's cosplay as Patrick Mahomes stops being a story, and his ability on the field starts being the story in college football. Because As much as it's annoying when everyone says, oh, is Texas back? If Nebraska's good this year, the story is Nebraska back? Because they were one time the power in college football.
The team that I really like in the Big Ten this year to kind of have that Indiana slot, I mean, I think you have to look at it. Ohio State should make the college football playoff. Penn State should certainly make the college football playoff this year. We'll see how good Oregon is. They have a lot of turnover this season, but I think Dan Lanning's one of the better coaches in college football. Oregon should also be good. There's one additional spot. Last year, the Big Ten got 4 teams in the college football playoff. We'll see if they can get 4 teams in this year. I think that team is Illinois this season. Very good coach, returns a lot of talent from last year, favorable schedule. I'm really big on, if you're a program like Illinois, it is a combination of talent, coaching, and schedule. And if you can get those 3 things to line up, you could win 10 or 11 games and find yourself in the college football playoff. This year, they avoid Michigan, they avoid Penn State, they avoid Oregon in Big Ten play. Now, they do play Ohio State, but they also have that team at home in October. You know they're going to try to put that game under the lights, and that's just a really difficult game for Ohio State to go on the road and potentially win. What are their road games this year? On the road against Indiana, on the road against Purdue, Washington, and Wisconsin. You will take that in Big Ten games if that's what you end up getting. They also play Duke on the road, which would be really difficult in basketball. Not really sure how difficult that's going to be in football this year. I like Illinois. You were telling me that you can get Illinois to make the college football playoff at plus 500. Hey, you know what? I'm taking the Fighting Illini. I think they're going to grab one of those last at-large spots, one of those wild card spots. Give me Illinois to make the college football playoff.
I am currently sitting here with a Illinois. I actually got them on FanDuel Future Day. That was the play. You can get them boosted up. You had the boost where you could jump up any bet by 50%. So I have them at plus 750 right now to make the college football playoff. But they returned basically everyone from a 9-win team last year. Like, they are, if you hate the modern era of college football, if you hate the portal, if you hate the player movement, Illinois is the team for you, because they basically bring everyone back. They are basically the same team this year that won 9 games last year with a schedule that is advantageous. So I too am on Illinois. Another off the wall team I'm kind of on, and this kind of works with player and team I'm keeping an eye on, South Carolina. Lenoris Sellers is a legitimate Heisman contender. He is not getting Arch hype. He is not getting Cade Klubnik hype. He is not getting Garrett Nussmeier hype. But Lenoris Sellers is really, really good. And South Carolina, quiet as it's kept last year, was 9-3, navigating a difficult schedule. And one of their 3 losses was at the Gun in Tuscaloosa. Their schedule, while still difficult in 2025, I don't want to paint South Carolina's schedule like it's Illinois or Indiana. They have a lot of difficult games, including they head to Missouri this year. That's no gimme in of itself. They have Bama still on the schedule. Like they have a difficult schedule. I don't want to make it seem like it's all layups, but if you have the quarterback and you have the coach and you were 9-3 last year, you feel like you can navigate that. And so I think as a dark horse, Tennessee type, because Tennessee made the college football playoff last year, and no one viewed Tennessee as the best team in the SEC. I think South Carolina could be a team to keep an eye on for the playoff, and Lenoris Sellers is a player to keep an eye on for the Heisman as a dark horse, plus 1,600 if you're into that gambling perspective.
Yeah, I kind of feel what you're talking about as the Tennessee kind of team. That's the way I feel about LSU. What really worries me about LSU heading into this season.
Because they're such a big brand. I guess that's where it's different.
And what bothers me about LSU is just their schedule this year. I mean, they begin the season on the road again. Like, listen to their road games. Like, I just read you the road games for Illinois. You'll take those road games. The road games this year for LSU are at Clemson, at Ole Miss, at Vanderbilt, at Alabama, and Oklahoma. Like, if those are your road games, that's really difficult. We're not talking about a home game against Florida, South Carolina, and Texas A&M. So just from a schedule standpoint, I think LSU could be a 3-loss team, and we're discussing them in late November as being a team that could make the college football playoff. They just have one of the more difficult schedules of any team in college football. I'm kind of with you. If you're telling me right now, I kind of got a pick. I think between Florida and South Carolina, I think one of those teams is going to make the college football playoff, and that probably better fits that Tennessee model that you're talking about being one of those teams. Let me ask you this, because every year we know how this works. There's a team that is a preseason top 10 ranked opponent that completely falls by the wayside. Last year, that team was Florida State. They were bad for most of the year. Who do you think that team could potentially be this year in the top 10? Who's that team that's ranked really, really high this year? Because it is going to be one of these teams that ends up fading and they're ranked outside the top 25 by the time the dust settles.
My knee jerk is Bama, because Bama's what, 9 right now? They're just, or 7 or 9. They're just inside the top 10. They have questions at quarterback. Kalen DeBoer was handled a Ferrari last year and still somehow found a way to hit potholes, including a loss at Oklahoma, which should absolutely never happen in 2024. I think they got a little better this year, but their schedule is always difficult. They have LSU. They have all the games Alabama is used to winning with Nick Saban, and I just have too many questions about quarterback. So I think Alabama can be good, but I think they'll be good the same way they were last year, like 9-3, 10-2 type of good.
Coming up in just a bit, we're going to be joined by Sean Callahan, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Nebraska plays a game coming up later today right here in Kansas City. They're playing Cincinnati. We'll get that for you coming up momentarily. We'll also try to see if Binkley can stop by. I love to talk a little college football with Binkus. I know we had week 0 last week. Today kind of feels like, man, college football is back. We got a complete slate of games coming up later today. We only had 5 games last Saturday. There are 16 games today, and obviously a full slate of games this weekend. We'll also talk a little Missouri coming up later today as well. Missouri, they have their season opener. They play Central Arkansas coming up today. Missouri still has no clue who their starting quarterback is, so we'll talk to Brandon Kiley about that coming up in just a bit. We'll also get back to the Royals as well. The Royals did exactly what they were supposed to, as they took 2 of 3 against the Chicago White Sox. And now we see what's going to happen this weekend against the Detroit Tigers. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our next guest. His name is Sean Callahan. He covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers for Husker Online. Sean, how you doing today, my man?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. It's great to be back down in Kansas City for Nebraska football. We haven't been down here in 15 plus years. So you're going to see a lot of red and it's not Chiefs red, making their way down here, down to Kansas City.
So let's just start with this, because I actually don't know the story to this. How did this game come together? Why is this game being played in Kansas City?
So it's Cincinnati's home game, and they already had 7 home games. So this was going to be kind of like a bonus 8th home game. They did a 2-for-1 deal with Nebraska. One of the games in Lincoln got canceled over COVID. So this is game 2 of this 3-game series. Cincinnati was going to play the game at Lucas Oil. They kind of agreed on that. St. Louis was initially in play because they kind of wanted it to be closer to their fan base. And it was a 2-hour drive. Well, the Arrowhead folks, you know, decided like, hey, we want to do an annual college football game now every year if we can make something like this happen. And they found out what the price tag was that Cincinnati was going to get from Lucas Oil. It was around $2 million-ish. And Arrowhead folks like, we'll double that with incentive. If this thing sells out, it could be $4, 5, 6 million, which it will be. So for Cincinnati, they'll make probably more on this one game here than they would maybe 3 home games back in Cincinnati, possibly 4 home games.
Right now, we're talking to Sean Callahan. He covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers for Husker Online. I don't know if you have the answer to this. Are you expecting Patrick Mahomes to be there? I know that him and Dylan Raiola have some conversation. I would also imagine, I know Travis Kelce's got a lot going on, but, I mean, his alma mater is playing at Arrowhead. Are you guys counting on them being at the game tonight?
Well, the Chiefs' connections to Nebraska run much deeper than that. I mean, you've got Dawson Merritt, whose father is the secondary coach for the Chiefs. Deshaun McCullough's father used to be Andy Reid's running backs coach for the Chiefs. And then Terry Braden was the assistant D-line coach for the Chiefs, and he's on this staff. Then you have Williams Winery, a superstar player out of Kansas City, playing his first game as a Husker here tonight as well. But, yeah, then you have the Dylan Raiola. I mean, he literally trains with the exact same people that Patrick Mahomes trains with. So they keep regular correspondence, is my understanding. Have not heard. I do expect Kelce to be here. Because of the Will Compton Busting with the Boys podcast with Taylor Lewan, you know, the Kelce brothers obviously played at Cincinnati, and they're going to do something with the two podcasts. So I do think you'll see a lot of Chiefs players here because of the Terry Braden connection. In fact, when they got here yesterday, Andy Reid greeted the Nebraska team because Matt Rhule and Andy Reid are pretty close as well, and kind of welcomed them in the stadium. They did a 4 o'clock walkthrough when they got into town. So it's a cool thing. I mean, you're going to see Arrowhead Stadium full, and not for a Chiefs game. It's going to be, if not a sellout, like 74,000. I mean, I think it's going to be really, really close to a full 76 or whatever the number is, just based on the ticket numbers that we've seen here heading into this game.
I actually cheer for Missouri, so I actually tried to forget the whole Williams-Winery thing. So let's just thought, why don't we just go ahead and move past that? Why don't we just focus on something different? Let's talk about Dylan Raiola. We were just talking about this. I thought he had a very, very promising freshman year for a true freshman. Are you expecting a major jump from him this season? Because if he takes a big jump this year, we're talking about a Nebraska team that could win 8-9 games and maybe be in the conversation to go to the playoff.
No doubt. And I think last year what happened was he started out really hot. And then you started to see the adjustments. It really started in the Illinois game, which is a Friday night game in Lincoln. First half, he completely torched Illinois. They adjusted what they did to Nebraska, and they had a hard time at that point. And from that point on, it just, you know, didn't click as well in the middle of the season for Dylan Raiola until they made the change. Then Dana Holgorsen was hired in November. He took over play calling and came in and ran the offense for the final month of the year. And you started to see the offense for Nebraska tick back up. And I thought that was a big, big change. And now you have Dana Holgorsen here for an entire offseason. They've upgraded the receivers. They brought in Dane Key. They beat Georgia head-to-head for him out of the portal as one of the more high-dollar receivers added by any team in the portal. He was Kentucky's leading receiver. They added Isaiah Hunter, who was Cal's leading receiver. Cortez Mills was one of the top high school receivers in the country that they took from Oklahoma, who was committed to the Sooners. So they have upgraded the weapons around Dylan Raiola, and they went out and spent about $2.5 million on 2 offensive linemen in the transfer portal that they've brought in on this line. Rocco Spindler as a guard from Notre Dame, and then Elijah Pritchett, the starting right tackle a year ago for Alabama, joined what already is a veteran offensive line. So not only have they improved the coaching around Raiola, they've also improved the weapons and the protection.
Right now, we're talking to Sean Callahan. He is with Husker Online. Talking to him for just a couple of more minutes. Sean, going back in time a little bit, do you guys miss being in the Big 8, Big 12, or you guys fully embrace being in the Big 10?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a lot of things I miss about the Big 12. And, you know, growing up in Nebraska, I mean, a lot of Nebraskans go to Kansas City. It's just a fun place to visit and go to. And I think for a lot of folks, this is, you know, just to come back down here for a football game, it does bring back a lot of Big 8, a lot of Big 12 memories. And I mean, just how impactful the Nebraska fan base was in this market. I mean, you used to have Kansas City star writers covering every Nebraska game at one point because there were so many Huskers in Kansas City and the crossover. But ever since, I'll be honest, I used to go on Kansas City Sports Talk all the time. This is one of the first interviews I've been on in Kansas City in 15 years. And it just kind of tells you, like, the two markets and fan bases and have kind of divorced themselves since Nebraska went to the Big Ten, and a lot has changed in these last 15 years.
A couple quick questions here and we'll get you out of here. Let's start with this. Who do you think could be the Big Ten's version of Indiana this year? I think in order to make a run in college football, if you're one of those kind of teams, it's a combination of a few things. It takes schedule, talent, and a little bit of luck. Like, you got to have a lot of those things kind of come together in order to do it. We saw Indiana make the college football playoff last year, not really an expectation from a lot of people. Who do you think that team could be this year?
Well, I think everybody agrees there's three playoff teams: Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State. But after that, you're right. There's, I think, room for a fourth. Illinois is in that conversation for sure. They return everybody. I wouldn't sleep on Indiana, but their schedule's tougher this year. Nebraska, I think, could easily be that. If Nebraska wins this game tonight and they have Michigan and Lincoln on September 20th without Bryce or without Sherrone Moore, and Bryce Underwood is going to be in Lincoln as a freshman, all of a sudden Nebraska's in that position, because their schedule, they don't go on the road until October 11th. So this is a Nebraska team that's going to be playing in front of its own fan base for essentially almost 2 months of the season before they go on the road to Maryland. And that's not really a daunting road environment. So it does set up for Nebraska. It's hard to call USC guys a sleeper because they're loaded with talent. It's just a matter of if Lincoln Riley can get that talent together. But USC, they went out and bought two, like, 320-pound nose tackle, defensive tackle type guys for their defense. They've added a lot of pieces to that roster because they figured out it's probably cheaper to buy players for Lincoln Riley instead of paying him $80 million and go through a coaching change.
Are you guys big believers in Matt Rhule? I really loved the hire, and I think he's kind of one of those coaches, and I'm sure you've thought this about other ones that they had. Man, if there's anybody that can get this Nebraska thing turned around, it's him. He's proven to be a really good coach at every single stop, has a pro pedigree, I think really speaks the language that you need to have success at Nebraska. Are you a believer?
Yeah, I think he's doing things the right way, and he's politically aligned to have success here with the chancellor, the president, the governor. All the people you need in your corner are huge Matt Rhule fans, and they've got everything here. I mean, they have the nicest facilities in the country. They opened their facilities 2 years ago or a year ago, and you know, everything is set up here to win, and they have great NIL and support. It would be towards the top 10, 15 in the country. So there's no excuse, and the fan base is arguably the best in the country when you can sell out a stadium with almost 90,000 fans. In a state that doesn't even have 2 million people. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And just think about this. I mean, you're going to have 65,000 plus Nebraska fans in Kansas City tonight on a Thursday night for an 8:00 game. So everything you need to win is here. And I do think Matt Rhule understands that, and he respects that, and he knows how to kind of push the right buttons here to kind of make it all work.
All right, I'll get you out of here with these final two. The first thing is Rob, my producer, you were talking to him just a bit ago. We were randomly just watching 94 Nebraska highlights. Do you ever just catch yourself thinking, man, this program used to be really, really good? Do you ever find yourself just going back in time?
I grew up around it. I went to all those games as a kid. I was in junior high and high school at that point. But, yeah, I can remember not seeing Nebraska lose ever. I mean, it was just, you know, kind of like being I'm a Chiefs fan and a Dodgers fan, so it's like my childhood has kind of flopped, where now the Chiefs and the Dodgers win and Nebraska has struggled. And you can't have them all, I guess, win. But yeah, that era, they went 60-3, guys, over a 5-year period. And they could have won 5 national championships. They won 3. They lost one on a last second field goal, and they fumbled away a Texas game that would have, if they won, would have played them for another title. So that was a team that was loaded, that could have won easily 5 national titles in that little era. And changed a lot of college football. But, you know, the Big 12 Conference, changed a lot from when they were in the Big 8. There were some academic restrictions that came into place where they weren't able to maybe take some of the partial academic qualifiers and some of the things that they had success with. Texas kind of implemented those changes And that directly impacted Nebraska's recruiting and type of players they were getting as the Big 12 grew under Texas and Oklahoma in that era.
Last thing here, we love to kind of ask people like yourself this question. Who's the former Nebraska Cornhusker player that just you had to be there for? Like, everybody knows the Tommy Frazier's, the Ahmad Greens, the Lawrence Phillips. But, like, who's that kind of, like, unsung Nebraska player that just, like, doesn't nearly get enough credit? But every Nebraska player, every fan realizes how valuable he was to the program and how good he was.
I'll give you two. Zach Taylor, the coach of the Bengals. He was the last Big 12 player or conference player of the year on offense for Nebraska. He was an outstanding quarterback just in a rough era under Bill Callahan. Played in the Big 12 championship game in here in Arrowhead in 06. Then I'll say Rex Burkhead. I mean, Rex Burkhead was beloved as what he did as a running back here and got hurt his last year. If not, he might have finished his career the number two all-time leading rusher at Nebraska. He's still top five. But Burkhead and Zach Taylor are two recent kind of unsung heroes that had great careers that maybe weren't on national championship type teams.
You know what? Don't tell anybody because I grew up a Missouri fan, but I used to really like Eric Crouch. I know he doesn't fit the category of the question I was asking you, but I always liked Eric Crouch.
Yeah, I was there in 01 when he had that big run in Columbia, and it was kind of one of his Heisman moments that year. But yeah, Crouch, just a different era of football when you go back to what 01 was to now and the offense Nebraska ran, the way the conference is built. But that was an elite team. I mean, they played in the Rose Bowl that year and obviously got beat by a very good Miami. It's kind of funny when you bring up Miami. Willis McGahee is sitting in the lobby right now because his son is on the Nebraska roster. So he was on that 0-1 Miami team that thumped Nebraska in the Rose Bowl that year.
Life is just a flat circle. Time is a flat circle. That is Sean Callahan joining us on the show. He has covered the Nebraska Cornhuskers for a while. He's with Husker Online. Sean, you guys do fantastic work, man. Enjoy Arrowhead, man. It should be a lot of fun tonight.
Hey, thank you. I enjoyed it. It's fun to be back on in Kansas City, and it should be a great game tonight. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. That is Sean Callahan with Husker Online joining us on the show today. Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, we'll get to the Royals that took care of business. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5, The Fan.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. This is a tweet from Adam Schefter of ESPN. The Cowboys continue to be the Cowboys. Several teams have spoken to the Dallas Cowboys about a potential Micah Parsons trade. And for the first time, the Cowboys appear willing to listen, sources tell ESPN. No trade is imminent, but another team could always make an aggressive enough push for it to come together quickly. The Cowboys would like to resolve the situation one way or another in the coming days with their season opener a week away against the Philadelphia Eagles. They hold their first practice coming up tomorrow, at least based on the information that we have right now. I would not be expecting Micah Parsons to practice for the Dallas Cowboys. How has this gotten so bad? Maybe I'm really falling for it. And I will admit it on the back end if I end up just being really wrong on this thing. Like, that's possible, right? Like, I might end up just being completely dead wrong about this. I thought that this was all a ruse. I thought this was all promotion for the Netflix documentary. The Netflix documentary is already on there. And now they're entertaining trading one of the five best defensive players at 26? So let me get this straight. I just want to understand this, because this is based off what Jerry Jones said in this article. When Micah Parsons issued his trade request on August 1st, Jerry Jones said they would not trade him. Jerry Jones believed that the Cowboys had an agreement with Micah Parsons on a five-year extension that would have averaged $40.5 million per season. But now they haven't made any proposals, and neither has Parsons' agent. So let me get this straight. You guys were prepared to give Micah Parsons $200 million in August. Now you're listening to teams for a trade? Just because you don't want to talk to his agent, even though you have to talk to his agent? You guys got to help make sense of this for me. You really do. This one, it has me flummoxed. It has me genuinely perplexed at what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. What teams do we think could make a Micah Parsons trade? It has to be the Patriots, right? The Patriots make all the sense in the world. They've got the cap space. If you're going to trade multiple first-round picks, I want to trade it to a team I'm not really sure if they're going to be that good. Like, if I'm trading you Micah Parsons, I at least want a chance that one of my picks can be a top 10 pick. I want an opportunity, a possibility that it could be that. Quarterback on a rookie contract, a lot of cap space, defensive-minded head coach. The Patriots, to me, make a lot of sense if you're going to be a team that would put a package together to try to go get Micah Parsons. Who are some other teams that we think could potentially do this if they're actually serious about it? Like, if the Cowboys are pulling a trick, hey, it's time to quit joking. It's game week if you're the Cowboys. It's genuinely game week. It's time to go. You're going on the road to play the best team in the National Football League, and you guys are unsure if your best player is going to be there. So I'm with you. You need to have a decision by the close of business Monday. Because then at that point, you don't practice on Wednesday. You actually are traveling to Philadelphia to get ready for it. Like, there ain't that many practice days, and he hasn't been practicing because you guys are not on the same page with the contract. So if you're going to make a trade, it better be imminent, or you better be willing to quickly resolve this situation one way or another, or you're just going to accept that this is going to play itself out into the season.
Let me ask you a question, because I will give this person credit on social media. Pretty Ricky, the football scoops guy. He nailed George Karlaftis, was 1,000% correct about George Karlaftis, and he was correct about Trey Smith. Pretty Ricky, he's an internet sleuth, basically. He says that the Packers have made a very fair offer to the Cowboys for Micah Parsons. So if we think, you know, Pretty Ricky was correct about the Chiefs scoops, he's at least saying the Packers are a team that is in the conversation for Micah Parsons, the Cowboys. Now, I have no idea if the Packers have enough to give up, and I don't know if they have the cap room to take him on. Those are things I just don't know off the top of my head about the upcoming year for the Packers, but Pretty Ricky nailed it on Karlaftis. He nailed it on Trey Smith. He's saying the Packers, so, which would make no sense to me, but the Packers seem like a team that are at least interested in Micah Parsons as far as talking to the Cowboys.
I mean, I think there's a lot of teams that would be super interested in it. If you were at the point, this is why I find it hard to believe that they would actually pull the trigger unless the deal is so favored in Green Bay's favor. The last time the Cowboys made the postseason, who they lose to? That was to Green Bay, didn't they?
Game was never competitive.
Green Bay came to their building, belt to backside, and then moved on. You're now going to trade that team your best player right before the start of the season? Also, if you're getting first-round picks, I mean, Green Bay's usually a playoff team hovering around the postseason. So you're willing to take the 21st pick this year and the 22nd pick in a future draft? You're willing to take that for one of the three best defensive players in the league? One of the five best defensive players in the league? In the NFC? Like, you're willing to help one of the teams that you are fighting with for playoff spots. You are fighting with for competition. You're willing to help give them your best player? That's why I'm saying, to me, the Patriots make sense. Let's ship them off to the AFC East. We don't got to deal with them anymore. You will absolutely have to deal with him again if you trade him to the Green Bay Packers. You'll have to deal with them maybe this season. You'll have to deal with Micah Parsons. So just why you would trade him to Green Bay if you were Dallas. I don't deny that Green Bay probably made a play. Why would you not make a play for Micah Parsons? I at least got a call, get a temperature check to see what the compensation looks like. But I don't know why the Cowboys would want to do a deal to a contending team in the NFC. That violates all the codes you're supposed to have.
It makes literally no sense to me. And I'm not saying I think it's the favorite or I think it's going to happen. I'm just stating a person on the internet who has been correct about these things in the past. I mean, he is basically, for college basketball fans, Trilly Donovan. He's the same type of person. He just announces these things. He says the Packers have an offer out to the Cowboys. Now, Is that offer, hey, Jerry, would this get it done? And Jerry laughs and hangs up the phone. That I can't answer. And why the Cowboys do business with the Packers is honestly beyond me, unless you're getting a player and picks back. But even then, I don't know what player you'd want. It makes no sense to me, but I'm just stating that's a team that is in the mix right now, according to Pretty Ricky.
So we'll see what happens. If you guys missed it, Adam Schefter is reporting that several teams have spoken to the Cowboys about a potential trade for Micah Parsons. And for the first time during this entire process, the Cowboys are open to at least listening to hear what trade offers are out there. No trade is imminent, but we know how these things happen. Like, now if you're telling me that Micah Parsons is available, it ain't that hard for you guys to put a package together to at least try to entice Dallas to give you this. I mean, players like this, you just don't get a chance to get them very often. We're talking about a 26-year-old who is a proven pass rusher who, not just proven, like, we're talking about a guy who can, he can win Defensive Player of the Year this upcoming season. These guys just do not become available, whether it's in free agency or via trade. So there will certainly be a lot of teams that are making the phone call. I mean, the only reason I'm willing to entertain this is it's now a game week for the Cowboys, and they do not appear to be close on this. Maybe we all get fooled. Maybe we all wake up and we get this, oh, hey, it was a false alarm, and the Cowboys and Micah Parsons got a deal done. They are not speaking to one another, which is not good as you are heading into the actual game week and you're trying to win the NFC East, and you're taking on the defending Super Bowl champions coming up in less than a week. Coming up on the other side, we're going to start transitioning to a little Royals baseball. Jacob Milhan's going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.